Hey everybody, this is Russ with just a quick note before the show starts. You might notice some audio irregularities this week. I'm really sorry about that. There was a catastrophic failure on my microphone, but it was only in being recorded, not in being picked up. So we went on and just talked for like 35 minutes before we finally realized that I was not being recorded. I was the only one. Everybody else was recording fine. So I went back through and I essentially did an audio commentary track for the podcast, and I did my best to replace what I had said. In some cases, I know that I said totally the wrong thing, but I think it still makes sense in context, and then I just cut around the things that I either couldn't remember or that didn't make sense. Hopefully, all of this sounds pretty good to you guys, and I wanted to get it out as quickly as possible after the show aired. Right now, the show is airing on the West Coast, and I'm finalizing the editing. Hopefully, you guys are all going to enjoy the episode, even though it might be a little different than usual. And without further ado, let's get started.
Come on, let's go with the Archie Show.
Welcome to Archie Digest, the Riverdale podcast. It's a podcast about a story about a town. We're here this week to talk about Chapter 7, In a Lonely Place. There was much discussion before we started recording because I'm terrible at remembering the names of things. I'm Chris Hayner from Screener at ScreenerTV.com. I write about many, many comic book things. And let's introduce yourself, Craig.
I'm Craig Byrne from KSiteTV.com. You know me. I'm on here every week.
It's true. And Russ?
I'm Russ Burlingame from ComicBook.com and the Emerald City Video Podcast. But more importantly, we have a special guest this week, once again, which is not the same special guest we had last week because we're trying to trick all of you.
Let me just say this. It's nice to have 2 weeks in a row, two different women, so it's not just a bunch of dudes in their 30s talking about the CW. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Lindsay. I'm also from ScreenerTV.com, and I'm super stoked to talk about Riverdale.
That's right. Honestly, it's essentially an extension of what Lindsay and I do all day, every day, sitting next to each other at work.
Yeah.
Except now, like, a bunch of strangers are listening in on it.
I know. Now I feel like I have to, like, up my game a little.
Good luck. before we dig into the episode, should we start with the big news that came out? We're recording this Tuesday, March 7th, 2 days before the Chapter 7 airs, and we got big news today.
Absolutely, yeah. Let's lead with that.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's happening, you guys. We got season 2. Yay! Riverdale's not going to end this year, and I'm so, so happy about it.
Which is good because I was thinking if they only got one season, we only have 6 episodes left to watch, and that like would kill my soul.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
Yeah. Well, and I'm super glad that the renewal came today because you know how these little mini hiatuses work mid-season? Like, it'll come back in 3 weeks, and the ratings will be depressed because it's been gone for a couple of weeks and people forgot it existed.
Yep.
And so, if they didn't renew it now, then for the next month, we'd be sitting there kind of biting our nails.
Sorry, go ahead, Craig. Yeah, it's the problem with us all being in different places. We can't see when we're interrupting. I do wish sometime in that 3 weeks or whatever the hiatus is that they would re-air the first 7 episodes somehow. Mm-hmm. Let people have the opportunity to catch up. I know there's the app, but like I remember when they used to do like full week Vampire Diaries marathons and stuff like that, and it really helped, I thought.
Well, Vampire Diaries is ending, so it didn't help very well. May it rest in peace.
Hey, 8 years is a long run. If we get 8 years of Riverdale, I'll be happy.
Absolutely.
For real.
For me, what's exciting is that the cast probably doesn't know a lot about what a potential season 2 is going to look like, and they've said that a bunch of times, but Roberto, the showrunner, has crazy ideas, and he's already been saying little things here and there about what he would like in season 2 and how the big bad would be a character that fans of Archie would know. So, I mean, automatically, I think everyone automatically goes Sabrina. So just the fact that we're going to get to explore that stuff is so, so cool.
I actually wrote an article on KSite TV the other day after Roberto made those comments, speculating as to who this character may be. It probably is.
Did you come up with Sabrina?
Oh, Sabrina was on the list, but I had other stuff like Hiram Lodge or Midge or, you know, random stuff like that. Just because I can't.
We had a commenter a while ago who, I think they theorized that, like, Sabrina had killed Jason Blossom, which would have been absurd, but also really awesome.
That would have been pretty fantastic, I agree.
Especially if it's Melissa Joan Hart.
Oh my gosh.
No, but I think it's you, Craig.
Now I only accept that as Jason Blossom's murderer.
I think it was you, Craig, that said it would be great if they cast Melissa Joan Hart to play one of Sabrina's aunts on the show.
Oh, yeah.
That would be amazing.
Since we didn't get Christopher Rich and Lauren Holly as Archie's parents, that's the best thing they can do.
I'm okay with that. We got Dylan McKay and Molly Ringwald.
That is a lot better.
There's not much going up from there. And Jughead got the killer from Scream. Spoilers.
Who I mean, he's got a definite killer vibe a couple of moments this week, too. So.
Oh, yeah. FD's got some moments we're going to get into.
Yeah.
But if we're ready to dive, if we're going to dive into the episode, I'm hoping we all want to start at the same place, and that's sort of how the episode opened, with the craziest dream sequence Riverdale could probably ever do 7 episodes into its first season, when they flash back to the crazy old Archie universe that old people remember reading.
Hey, I remember reading it. That must mean I'm old.
Yes.
But
that's exactly what that means.
Yeah, we had Jughead with the typical crown. We had, I loved Archie with the bow tie and the R shirt, and yeah.
And Jughead with the S sweater.
Yes,
yep. It was.
Although he has the S shirts all the time.
That's true, but it was so ripped right out of those old comic pages that it. I don't even know what the words are. It was just so exciting to see. And realize that they can actually do it. Like, they can do that, and they could sprinkle old stuff like that in and have it make perfect sense within the story.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, even in a dream sequence, Jason Blossom still doesn't speak.
Why would he?
It's true.
This poor kid can't catch a break with getting a line on the show, can he?
No.
And it sucks because he has a decent speaking voice. So let him say something.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll say something like Craig was saying last time. I think that we're going to see him a little bit more in the finale.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the part where Russ is going to probably like edit in like content of Trevor speaking when we're on set, just so people know he has a voice.
If I don't, I'll leave that observation here so that they know I'm being lazy.
Okay. Good deal.
Fantastic.
So well, what did you think of that scene, Lindsay?
I really liked it as someone who hadn't read the comics but recognized all the like original Archie stuff. It was a very clever way to sort of give a throwback, I think.
It also somehow made Alice Cooper even scarier.
It was creepy that Alice and Betty were like making the same like gestures. I don't know them like when they both like turn their heads the exact same way. It's like, okay,
this that is was real. So creepy. That was like out of Stepford. Like, yeek.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure that was absolutely intentional.
But also, why was Veronica there? Can anybody answer me that question?
Because
like, you can't joke and don't hang Veronica. Out.
If it's Archie Comics, Betty and Veronica come as a pair.
That's fair. It seemed like Veronica and Jughead they've had maybe one or two scenes together total.
Yeah.
So I was like, why is she in his dreams? What's going on here, Jug?
Yeah, and this week she randomly picked Reggie to hang out with, which was a dynamic we haven't seen yet. So that was interesting.
I feel like Veronica as like the pretty relatively popular new girl, like sometimes her role is literally just what's a dynamic we haven't seen, who's a character we haven't seen, let's just pair him up with Veronica because why not.
I mean, but given that she's the new girl in town, that is kind of like the feeling out process for anyone who, you know, arrives at school and is dropped in the middle of high school, having not been with any of these people before. She's got to kind of feel out where she's going to fit in. Clearly, we know where she's going to fit in. It's with Betty until the end of time when they drive off like a cliff, Thelma and Louise style. But until then, she's got to test the waters with everyone.
Except for when she's a pussycat, obviously.
Oh, yes.
Well, you know, another thing I really liked about this episode in particular, even though maybe in the context of the show it didn't make a whole lot of sense, is when they were doing the search party in the woods. And I loved that the kids were all taking point, and Hal and Alice Cooper just followed along. Like, Alice Cooper would never stand for that, but, you
know. That's the mark of a CW show, is when the teenagers are running things, and the adults are just like, I guess we'll go along with it.
Well, Lindsay, as you've pointed out in writing, the adults of Riverdale are terrible.
They're so awful. I can't handle how awful the adults of Riverdale are. None of them should be parents.
The only thing I can compare it to is, like, they are as terrible as people as the people on The Flash are at their jobs.
They have jobs on The Flash?
Yeah, they work for science.
Well, you wouldn't know it, seeing how they never show up for work.
You know, Betty has written more articles than Iris West has written.
You know, more importantly, Greg Berlanti in his treatment of journalists is kind of a bummer overall. He gives a really skewed idea of what being a journalist is.
Except for Supergirl. She's been very intrepid.
But like, right, but she became a journalist at a major magazine by saying, you know what, I think I'm going to be a journalist now.
Yeah, that's stupid.
She only shows up for work like once every three episodes. Yeah, I was going to point out, though, that in that scene where they're doing the search party, I also loved that Josie was there, but she wasn't all pussycatted up. It shows that she does actually care.
Yeah, but I don't recognize Josie without those ears. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, kind of.
Josie's
I think part of it is that Ashley, like, changes her hairstyle every episode. So when she doesn't have the ears, it takes you a second to, like, recognize.
That's very possible, yeah.
I'm still waiting for a storyline for Melody. Season 2.
Season 2,
I'm still waiting on Melody to have more than one line.
Hey, that's one more than Jason Blossom has had.
True.
Ouch.
Wow, this got sad. This got really
well, bad. the fact that both of those actors are people that we're, like, friendly with and interact with regularly on Twitter makes it feel like people are going to know we're not being mean.
That's true.
I hope so. No, we're all on
Ginger this episode. Did anybody notice Ginger at all this episode?
Yes, Ginger was the one that texted
Cheryl. Yeah, she was the one by the snap machine. Yeah, she was the one that texted Cheryl.
That's right.
You know, who was like, she's the one that knew that Polly escaped and told. Now, so are we supposed
So the adults are awful, but the kids are terrible at keeping secrets.
Oh, yeah.
No, but are we to believe that Polly got out of that window by herself?
Apparently, yeah.
Well, there was blood on it, too. Was she bleeding in the attic? I forgot to check.
She was wrapping herself, yeah.
Okay.
In the attic, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Also, it was kind of creepy. It was kind of creepy the way she just snuck up on Betty up in the attic, too. It's like, okay, yeah, maybe she's not completely right.
The people in Riverdale are super creepy. That's going to be my next article. Stop being creepy. Announce yourself when you walk into a room.
This is the thing about Polly is we were led to believe that she was, like, essentially kind of held against her will at this place. But there's so many instances so far of interactions between her and Betty, where you're like, oh no, Polly has, like, a mental disorder. She has some issues.
There's so many instances of that with Betty, too. Up until just recently, I was convinced that Polly was, like, an alternate personality of Betty's.
Yes!
Which would have been amazing.
Yeah, that was a thing we talked about a few times. That was one of those... Pardon?
We actually asked Lily about that. On set.
And that was a well-timed piece of interview because we happened to be on set the day that the Dark Betty episode aired. And so I was just like, okay, everybody's going to be theorizing that Polly doesn't exist, but we'd seen six, we knew she existed. So I was like, okay, Lily, just tell us, say the words that she exists.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes they lie to us because, like, you know, Madeline's saying that Cheryl and Jason, their love was not sexual. I don't believe her. So.
What? Why?
Twincest.
This oh my god! A very interesting turn. Okay, we need to talk about this for a second.
After the Jason Blossom funeral and the speech Cheryl gave, I 100% have no inkling that it was sexual at all. He was her protector.
I feel like that was a purposeful clue that they dropped in the pilot to be like, you don't know, maybe it is incest. And then later off, they were like, we were never going to do that. Stop being silly.
Just like they made
Miss. You guys are right. I'm just being ridiculous.
It wouldn't surprise me if, well, and the Grundy was the example I was going to bring up, is it wouldn't surprise me if they left that door kind of quasi open in the pilot so that they could decide whether or not they wanted to explore it if they got picked up. And then
so glad once they didn't. Got
picked up, they decided no.
I like the actual story better, though. I like that they were,
absolutely.
You know, just each other's only friends in this house of monstrous parents.
Mm-hmm. Monsters. All right. Back now. Okay. The thing about Riverdale is there's no end of things to talk about.
This is true.
We could go on for hours about the crazy drama that is being a member of the Blossom family, but there are definitely some things I want to make sure we touch on. And firstly, it's that Jughead lives under the stairs at school. I don't know how he's getting away with that. That makes no sense to me whatsoever.
This is the same school where Betty and Veronica just kind of broke and entered because they wanted to. So,
yes, I don't know. I guess there's no security. Super lax at this high school. Like, my high school got locked after hours.
Maybe because it's a small town. Everybody trusts each other.
And why was Archie at school in the morning when Jughead was taking a shower?
And why didn't Jughead have
Wait, what, Lindsay?
Why didn't Jughead have a better excuse? Like, if I was living under the stairs of my school, I would have, like, six backup excuses as to why I was there so early.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that hard to be like, I showed up early to get tutored, or...
Work on the blue and gold.
Or for the paper.
The hot water was out at my house.
Yeah.
Anything. That's what I'm
saying. Off the cuff, we came up with three awesome excuses. Jughead, just silence.
But
I mean, I guess you could make the argument that because it was Archie... that it was easier to just, well, not even that he didn't want to, but that it's easier to just be forthcoming than to try and lie to somebody who might recognize that you're lying and who might actually give a crap.
Yeah, sure. But being in forthcoming to Archie led to, like, the douchiest Archie moment in so long. Archie was finally developing as, you know, a human being, and then he makes the, like, Jughead says, don't tell Betty, because clearly... Betty and Jughead are sort of dancing around getting together, and he doesn't want to be like, he's like, this would be embarrassing to me if Betty found out I live under the stairs like Harry Potter. Archie says, well, Betty wouldn't care. Veronica's the snob, and I just wanted to hit him.
Me too.
Oh, what a terrible guy Archie can be.
I feel like that line.
Yeah, Archie's like the parent of the show. He's kind of the worst.
Well, he's not that bad. But I feel like that's a line that was written, like, I was thinking about this because last week, obviously, the one shot came out. In that one shot that clearly hadn't been established yet when they wrote it. And I kind of felt like that line was an echo of something that, okay, that would make sense in the comics where Veronica's kind of a rich bitch. It's not at all her personality in the show. So I almost kind of feel like, okay, who wrote that line and when?
Fair.
It would have had to have been written at least after the first couple episodes were written, where they make it clear that, like, this is not who Veronica is.
Yeah, like, maybe he could have said, well, Cheryl would have made fun of you for it, because Cheryl's kind of...
Yeah.
Well, especially since it comes one episode after Archie having, like, some actual serious issues with Veronica when he asked her to be a part of the same thing and then kicked her out. And, like, they had a heart-to-heart moment. So it was weird. It felt like a really kind of hard left turn to me that he was then like, oh, well, Veronica's my snobby friend, so I won't tell her that you're homeless.
Yeah. By the way, just a side note, my wife and I, we watch Riverdale together on Monday nights. like after the kids go to bed, after Callie gets home from grad school, we sit down and we watch it. And it's always, she's such a nicer person than I am. So she usually doesn't have like snarky things to say, but when, towards the end of the episode, when, the pussycats reassemble, she, for like 2 seconds, she was like, they're not going to kick Veronica out, are they? And then like, she goes, no, of course they're not, because they're not terrible like Archie.
Oh.
That's so true.
But I think, Chris, you wrote this article a while ago that Archie is one of the only teenagers on TV that behaves like a teenager. Like, we joke that he's a douchebag and he's just really insensitive and ridiculous. When, like, if you look at any 16-year-old boy, that is not something that would be out of the ordinary for them to say.
Well, weirdly enough, Cole Sprouse was in our office last week for some reason. So I sat down to talk to him, and I asked him about that specifically in the wake of Jughead and Betty getting together, because I think we talked about on the podcast last week where Archie comes from a very simple, very normal sort of home life where everyone around him sort of lives in chaos. And in talking to Cole, he was very adamant that that was exactly how the showrunner wants people to view the show, because Archie's kind of their viewing glass, the normal viewing glass into this crazy, crazy world, which I think is, it's interesting, but at times it can be aggravating, because while Archie is a normal teenager, as a dude in his 30s, normal teenagers can be really annoying.
Indeed. But as we were talking about before we were recording, this episode had the first inklings of Jughead actually being a teenager, like in being vulnerable. Yes. Do you want to talk about that, since you're the one that came up with it?
Oh, I'll talk about Jughead until the end of time. When Sheriff Keller, or as you jerks hatingly dubbed him last week, Sheriff Killer, like,
well,
some
that's
kind
what
of
KJ
monster.
Would say.
That's clever. I like that.
No, it's not clever. It's terrible, Lindsay. Stop
but if,
it.
If KJ calls Betty Biddy, then KJ would probably call him Sheriff Killer.
Yeah, but he's trying to say Keller. You were trying to insinuate that he's a murderer. Anyway, wow. So he comes to pick up Jughead to, because Jughead built his own murder wall, because why not? So he comes to pick up Jughead, and you see, as Jughead's getting led out of the school by the sheriff, you see this look of panic in his eyes, and he tells Archie and Betty he says, call my dad. And it's the first time you ever see Jughead at a loss for what to do. And it just rings true, like, oh, because he's a kid. He's not like the dark, mysterious narrator who like lords over the town and tells everybody what's going on. Like, no, he's 16. And he's found himself smack dab in the middle of a murder investigation.
Yeah.
Now we know Jellybean is 10.
Yeah.
That was established in this episode.
I have to admit, I was really relieved to hear that Jellybean was, like, alive and well, because I had this, like, awful theory that something had happened to his little sister and that caused his parents to break up, and I was like, we're about to get really, really emotional with Jughead's backstory. But never fear, he's alive.
I love the little aside he talked, it's like, she wants to be called JB now.
Yeah.
and it was just the tiniest little detail that makes, even though we're not going to meet that character this year, I'm sorry to say, it's the tiniest little detail that makes her feel more real. It gives her personality. So when we finally do meet her, it'll be great.
It's also cute because her dad is FP. So, you know, using initials, you know.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that. I'm not smart enough to think.
It was interesting that all of Jughead's records just call him Jughead. And I think it's even Sheriff Killer even said to him, well, your name is Jughead or something like that. And it's like,
no.
He's Forsythe.
There was a moment when Sheriff Keller was like, so, do you deal with bullying or anything? He's like, my name is Jughead. What are you And, like, that's not his name. That's the name he chooses to go by. Like, his name is Forsythe. So, which is admittedly worse than Jughead, but still.
Yeah, that was actually when I talked to Cole way back at Comic-Con last year. I led with kind of half jokingly something along the lines of, you know, you have probably the most unfortunate name in all of comics. And he goes, which one, Jughead or Forsythe? Because they're both pretty terrible.
He's right. They're both pretty terrible, so. But Jughead rules.
This is true.
So yeah, it was nice to get those peeks at sort of what Jughead is like under the sort of dark and mysterious poet surface.
And was this the first episode where we saw him without his hat?
You know what? I think so.
No.
No.
I mean, according to Cole, yes. However, in my rewatch of one of the early episodes, there was another, like, or you know what? I might be mistaken. This might be
when he's in the shower. He didn't have the hat on.
That obviously. But when we talked to Cole, he said that the first time we saw him without a hat, it was around Betty, and that was a sign of his like vulnerability around her.
Oh, I like that.
And so in my head, the idea of him not having the hat is all crossed up because I'm pretty sure you're right. I'm pretty sure in the shower is the first time we've seen him without it.
Well, it might also be like it's the first time we see him like willingly take off the hat. With like he can't wear the hat into the shower. His hat would get gross after a while. Yes. Did he wear the hat to breakfast? The most awkward breakfast of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. Last week. Yeah.
Yeah. That breakfast still gives me chills.
Different subject somewhat. It was very nice to see Cheryl again. I missed her last week.
Yeah, I don't like when she disappears. I need Cheryl in every episode forever.
Cheryl's my favorite character.
Did you see that Madeline? Did you see that Madeline last week during the show when they were all live tweeting? She tweeted something along the lines of, hey, aren't you guys? Why aren't more people sad that I died last week?
Wait, what?
She was just making a joke because she wasn't in the episode.
Oh,
but that was her contribution to the live tweet. Was like, why aren't more people sad that I died last week? And I was just like, that's a pretty great response to the.
Oh, I like her.
Yeah, but she's on the Thea plan, I guess, where she has to miss a couple episodes a year.
Many, many people are on that poor plan.
I know.
But she, like, what she did get this week, I thought was such a great follow-up to what she sort of went through in 4. When you saw her go from, like, essentially what would be hating Polly for sort of taking her brother away to having a very, very nice moment with her after she realized that Polly is pregnant and is carrying Jason's child. And when Polly going to her and saying, like, Jason loved you so, so much, you could just see how happy she was to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I had noted earlier in the season about, I want to say Veronica, was that very few people have just come up to, like, the people who have these terrible, terrible things happening in their lives who are kids and can't really deal with it. Mm-hmm. Almost nobody on this show just walks up to Veronica or to Cheryl and says, man, I'm really sorry that you're going through this. Like, everybody has an angle or some snark or whatever. And so on the rare occasion when somebody literally just does that bare minimum human thing of saying, I'm really sorry about your brother, immediately they are, you know, they appreciate in Cheryl's esteem.
Absolutely. Well, I think especially in this case, the fact that it was Polly who, I mean, let's be honest, Cheryl did not view Polly in a very good light before this episode. She viewed, like, she thought Polly was terrible. But sort of getting an idea of who the real Polly is, how important she was to Jason, and the fact that it told her that Jason was open about his love for his sister to other people, which I don't know that she would have known before that, because the Blossom family is very private about everything. But, like, now there's someone else out there who knows Jason's love for her was true.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Penelope was creepy as all heck when she's, you know, she's so good at, I mean, the actress who plays her is so good at what she does, because you can just see Penelope manipulating underneath everything she says.
And I love that we saw Cheryl recognize it almost immediately, because I feel like we keep getting these snapshots at Cheryl Blossom's home life and how she's treated and how she can manipulate other people and recognize when she's being manipulated. It just makes me really eager for when we get a really huge episode for Cheryl Blossom's parents.
I think the last couple episodes are going to be super Blossom heavy. I mean, one of the few things that they told us about the finale that I think we can say without fear of spoiling anything is that Madeline told Greg and I that. Well, that too. But no, Madeline told Craig and I that the last time you see Cheryl in this season, it's going to blow your mind. Yeah,
I'm going to make this my prediction right now.
Wait, are you getting it? Are you predicting the killer?
No, I'm predicting that this big final Cheryl scene will be her finding Sabrina the Teenage Witch to try to resurrect Jason. I'm putting that down right now.
I don't like that.
WTF worthy.
Sounds so weird. I wouldn't know what to think about any of that.
I want Sabrina to be the next Archie show that the CW does.
I mean, what would you rather have, a Sabrina the Teenage Witch show or a reboot of Charmed, really?
Well, no, here's the thing. I want a Sabrina the Teenage Witch show, but in a Sabrina on Riverdale situation, I'm down with them, like, leaning into sort of Wicca and all that, but, like, going flat-out crazy supernatural.
But here's the thing.
I'm working on this show.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, Cheryl could think Sabrina could do it, and then Sabrina could just, like, after the cliffhanger picks up and start a season two, could just be like, no, witchcraft doesn't really work like that. Sorry, Cheryl. And that could be the end of it.
It could, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's what I mean.
I would be down for that. I'm very scared of the idea of, like, no, yeah, we're going to interdict, like, she can make things appear out of her hands. Her cat talks and
well, and all the kinds problem- of stuff. The problem with the kind of cliffhanger that you're talking about, Craig, is that the summer would basically become everybody speculating how crazy they were going to go with it. And then when it became like, no, honey, I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way, then so many people would be let down and pissed off, and it would start the season on kind of a sour note for a lot of people, I think.
That's you mean kind of like Flashpoint?
Oh,
I wasn't going to say it.
But you were thinking it.
I was.
But she could, in theory, go to Sabrina in looking for some sort of voodoo-like solution to getting revenge on whoever killed Jason.
It's true.
Like some sort of, like, put a hex on him or some shit like that.
And then we see Sheriff Keller, like, having a heart attack in prison.
Stop it. Stop it.
I do, by the way, have... I had forgotten about this until I rewatched it, but I do have, like... a crazy-ass theory that I came up with on the airplane while I was watching this episode.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, so there's a reason behind this that I can't... Like, there's a reason behind part of this that I can't get into, and the rest of it I'll just say.
Russ killed Jason Blossom.
I did, man. Yeah, you're not supposed to say that.
Spoilers.
But no, here's my thing. I feel like there's a distinct possibility, and I don't think that I'm actually going to say this is my theory, but I feel like there's a distinct possibility, and some people will be talking about it after this episode, that Clifford Blossom would be the killer, because the reason FP has the jacket isn't necessarily because, or at least not exclusively because he burned the car, but because Cheryl and Jason are actually his kids.
Ooh.
Cheryl and Jason are FP's kids?
Yeah, as in FP had an affair with Penelope 20 years ago, and this is what came of it. Part of the reason for that is just that I'm trying to think.
All right,
yeah.
I'm not gonna tell you.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's, I don't actually want to know because, like, as much fun as it is to hassle you for not telling us. I get spoiled on fucking everything because of the nature of this job. So, like,
yeah.
The longer I can stay unspoiled on stuff, the more fun it is.
Savitar did it.
But right, let's give it 5 more seconds of silence and we can jump back in.
Cool.
But, yeah, that's a crazy kind of left field theory. But I do kind of feel like – say again?
No, I can see it. That would be such a weird. Mm-hmm. Well, and that would actually here's why I'll say that's not the craziest thing I've ever heard. It's something else I spoke with Cole about, and it was the fact that Jughead and FP become, in his own words, like the biggest storyline in the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. So, like, something major is going to be happening with Jughead and FP.
And I have a really hard time believing that I think we're still early enough in the season that I have a really hard time believing that it's as simple as he has the jacket because he burned the car because he's a killer. Like, whatever is going on that has him having the jacket, it's like, is it because he's being framed? Because somebody knows that, like, he's a loser convict biker gang guy with alcohol problems and blah, blah, blah. So he can just leave that shit in his house and, you know, his kid just got arrested, so they could probably get a search warrant.
Could somebody have put it in his house?
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah, I'm wondering whether FP has it because he burned the car and took it for one reason or another, which probably isn't that he's the killer. Or
I mean, somebody thinks
they could leave it there.
See, in watching it, for me, I was very much of the belief that it was some Southside Serpent business. They were hired to do it, or they worked out a deal with someone. I don't know who it would be, but like,
and there were drugs in the car. We can't forget there was a huge
Like, word could have gotten around the Serpents, like, hey, yo, there's this car out in the woods, stuffed to the brim with dope. And of course they would go steal it all and then burn the car.
Well, what I think Riverdale has done very impressively is they've sort of dropped clues that many, many characters could be the killer. Like, we have Betty's dad has the murder board, and Jughead's alibi is completely fabricated by Archie's dad. And now there's the jacket in the closet. So no matter what, someone's going to have a piece of evidence that doesn't lead anywhere.
Well, you make a good point, especially about Jughead, in that his alibi is fabricated and we don't know what he was doing because he was supposed to be with Archie on a road trip and that did not happen. So we don't know what Jughead was doing.
Yeah, he's got two fake alibis.
Oh, that makes me suspicious.
But, and also, why was Fred so easy to just make up an alibi for Jughead without even asking, so where really were you?
Because Fred's a good guy, Craig.
I don't know. Fred kind of screwed over FP.
So yeah, I'm not saying, he's also on the bad adults list. He's not on the up and up.
Yeah. I don't know. And I mean, I still, even after this episode, I still kind of believe that it's a little bit more complex than you would necessarily assume. But I still kind of believe, you know, the plurality of Fred's story over FP's.
Honestly, I think the truth is going to be somewhere in between the two. I think there are things that Fred probably isn't being forthcoming about because they won't paint him in the best light to his child.
Right.
But at the same time, FP's track record isn't great, you guys.
Yeah, it's also not great that he's letting his son couch surf. Essentially, it's what he believes, but that's not the mark of a good parent or a responsible adult.
See, I actually kind of wondered if FP might have felt when Jughead, you know, when asking Jughead where he was going, that, oh, well, Fred is going to steal Jughead too. Kind of like he stole his company. Like if Jughead stole his house. You know?
Well, that's why I have to actually give FP props, because he, by the end of this episode, had some really great development for both Fred and FP, I thought. And it shed a lot of interesting light on Jughead and Archie's friendship. Like, their dads were best friends. They were in a band together, the Fredheads, which is great. But clearly, FP has had a much rougher go of it at life. He's made some poor decisions. But at the end of the episode, I felt like he got just the tiniest bit of redemption by telling Jughead that he should go with Fred for now. Well, he sort of figures himself out.
Yeah, and that's, first of all, I thought that was great character development for him. Second of all, when I was sitting alone on the plane and formulating a conspiracy theory that FP is somehow Jason's dad. That was one of the things where I was just like, if he's gotten so much worse so suddenly with the alcohol and things, that maybe that has something to do with the larger story of Jason and the serpents and.
Possibly.
Which could obviously be true even if he wasn't the father. But it strikes me as, for him to be, like, it sounds like he's never been totally all there, but that the last 6 months or whatever it is, he's really fallen apart. And so for him to fall apart right around the same time that all this other shit was going on strikes me as like, okay, it probably has something to do with all the other shit.
That's true. That's something that you don't think about a lot when you're like solving these murder mysteries, is that while you're trying to figure it out, somebody has been living as a murderer for the past 6 months, and you have to like suss out which sort of behavior is super suspicious.
Especially when it's the sheriff.
Damn it, Craig.
If it turns out to be him, you're just going to be... You're going to look so silly.
Well, I mean, I'd listen.
No, because he knows who the killer is.
Is this more a podcast gripe than anything else? I know we get the explicit tag every week because of me, but clearly Greg is trying to get me to curse, and that's not my fault.
Well, I mean, to be fair, we have the explicit tag because I designated us as an explicit podcast when I submitted us because I'd already...
branding us. Like with the scar.
Oh, no. No, that's all me. When I submitted us to iTunes, I just marked us as explicit because by that point we'd recorded two episodes and I was like, well, this is our identity.
All right. Well, Veronica had a pretty nutty, let's say, she had a good night on the town, really. She was with, I believe, as she put it, her, like, a party girl, her best gay, and a piece of meat or something like that.
I think it was her celebrity gal pal, which was Josie.
Oh, that's what it was, yes. Josie, the most famous person in Riverdale.
I'm trying to figure out how famous Josie is, because are we talking like Josie and the Pussycats? Or is this like the early years? People seem to know them in Riverdale.
I'm assuming they're the only band in town. She's the mayor, and her dad's like a famous jazz producer of some sort.
Okay, so she's not going to be noticed out and about in New York City, just in Riverdale.
For sure.
Although, weirdly enough, there was a thing on Twitter the other day, I guess Ashley Murray got, like, waved down by some random dude who was, like, shouting at her when she had her headphones in, and when she took it off, it was because he was listening to her version of Sugar Sugar on his iPad.
Nice.
That's awesome.
I mean, obviously not the shouting part. That was probably a little scary.
Oh my god, Josie, come here!
That's one of those kind of weird situations where I almost kind of feel bad for... like random creepy dude having a celebrity encounter, because then the celebrity who you clearly like, and that's why you're excited, takes to social media and is like, yeah, I had a random creepy dude today.
Happens to me all the time. Just hounded by wild Archie Digest fans. Try going to the grocery store. It doesn't work.
Well, I mean, Archie Digests are notoriously common at the grocery store.
Oh, it's true. It's very meta.
I was going to say, when we were in Vancouver, we should have all taken a picture of each of us holding an Archie Digest. That would have been really meta.
Yeah, except that I'm not really sure I know where we would have gotten them, because we weren't near any place that I would, like the comic shops.
Well, yeah, because we weren't staying where we usually stay, which is right next to a grocery store. It would have been, actually, what would have made that even better, since considering the ride home, is if we had all gotten pictures with the Archie Digest and Trevor had been in the picture with us, since he was on the shuttle.
He died.
And then, you know, it could have been like, Jason Blossom's not dead.
No, he's dead.
And he can talk.
And he's not allowed to talk either. Dead men tell no tales.
Boom. That's why he hasn't had any lines.
But just because I got to get back, just because I want to, I have to talk about something Veronica related.
I approve of this.
I'm going to jump back because they went to...
Oh, yeah, the club.
Which I didn't think was a thing in Riverdale. And it's some, like, first of all, I don't know, everything about this club was weird to me. Riverdale seems like a town of maybe 47 people, so I don't know why there's a club, why the bartender gives all these underage people alcohol to me, and I kind of love it for that, because it felt like they went away from the town for a night, and it made sense that they weren't as integrated into the rest, because they were off on their own little adventure under laser lights and techno music.
Am I the only one who asked or the question, who paid for all that stuff when Veronica got cut off? It's just like, if my friend invited me out for a night on the town.
No, they established that Veronica had cash because she expected her mom to cut her off. This was part of, like, the dance.
Okay, good, good, good. I was like, if she, like, just fobbed that bill off on her friends, I would feel very uncomfortable about that situation.
Well, I think Reggie's supposed to be rich, too, though, isn't he?
I mean, I think so. He certainly is in the comics, but it's for the purpose of the TV show, it's super weird, because how many really, really rich families do you have in this one tiny town? Actually, it wasn't Veronica that weirded me out. It was Josie, because she was so ready to just totally throw the, my mom's the mayor, and this dude's dad is the sheriff, and we're going to screw you up for serving minors card. And Veronica was the one who was like, no, no, don't worry about it, man. I got this.
That's such a mayor's kid thing to do.
Listen, guys, I don't know about you, but I used to get thrown out of all sorts of bar tabs by being like, no, my mom's the mayor. That's just a thing you do. It works, obviously, too.
Yeah, the weirdest part was he used to do it in towns with a male mayor, and just nobody questioned it. It was like,
yeah, L.A. mostly. I do it around L.A. still. My mom's the mayor, and they're like, Eric Garcetti? Shut up.
That's my mom.
Yeah, obviously. So yeah, that was a fun little adventure for Veronica. I'd like to see her back with Betty, though. I don't think I'm the only one. I think we can all agree that Kevin's reaction to Betty and Jughead together was fantastic. With so much horrible stuff going on, I like what these people can just sort of hang out in normal-ish situations, like in their really nice lounge at school. And just talk about life.
Hashtag Bughead.
Yeah.
And yes, and the Bughead fans got some more kissing this week.
Yeah.
Wait, is that what they're called?
I guess they prefer it to Jetty?
Yeah, they're Bughead.
That's terrible.
Well, they like it.
Don't tell the internet I said that.
Yeah, the internet's going to hear you, and then they're going to boycott the show.
See, I like Juggy. Why not Juggy? She calls him Juggy.
Yeah, I feel like that's easily misconstrued.
I'm going to shout out to Betty and Juggy again, because that person was tweeting me while we've been recording. And also Mimi C, who had tweeted me with the question, do we think that Reggie, Cheryl, Jason, etc. are older than the other characters?
Well, like, Jason and Cheryl are supposed to be twins, right?
Yeah, but I mean older than like Betty, Veronica, and Archie.
I get the feeling, well, that's interesting, because Polly is the older sister to Betty, so that kind of makes you want to believe that Jason and Cheryl were maybe a year older,
Jason
older.
And Cheryl were seniors, and everyone else was juniors.
I mean, it's weird, because of course we know that Archie's a sophomore, and my understanding was that Jason was a year older than him, but that would have made him just a sophomore when he was the captain of the football team, and they made like such a huge deal about Archie being the captain of the football team as a sophomore. Making him a little older would kind of mess with the thing. I think part of the issue is that there are like three or four different kind of timelines that have been alluded to, but nobody has like said outright, here's where everybody was at this time and here's how old they are. And like, that's fine, but it's the MST3K mantra. It's like, you start to think about the timelines, you end up down this rabbit hole, and it's like, okay, just repeat to yourself, it's just a show, I should really just relax.
Well, the younger we make these kids, the more fucked up the Grundy thing is going to get.
Well, I mean, Archie's a sophomore, so I think no matter what you do, he's like 15, right?
That's okay, I thought he was like 16 or 17, that's even more gross.
That makes the Grundy thing so much worse.
I mean, Betty wasn't going to let him get held back, so I assume he's graded at the same rate as regular kids.
But yeah, no, I think that in terms of like teen TV, there's just sort of this understanding amongst fans that no one's going to say how old these teens are, because they're going to be in high school for the next 5 to 6 years or however long the show is going to be on.
And they're going to be doing like things that you can't show actual high schoolers doing on television.
Yeah.
It's like when Smallville started and you had Tom Welling playing a high school freshman and being like 10 feet taller than Pete and Chloe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to throw a Smallville reference in this time.
Yeah, Lindsay, what you'll learn is that there is never an Archie Digest podcast without Craig working Smallville into the discussion.
Do you know...
I come to work into every discussion.
No. Oh, no.
Do you know which potential Riverdale killer was on several episodes of Smallville? Martin Cummins, who plays Sheriff Killer.
Who did he play on Smallville?
I think he played a doctor who was involved with trying to get Lex institutionalized. It was in season 3, like trying to get his memory wiped, something like that, I think.
Another one to add to my CW chart. If you look far, hard enough, you can connect every single CW show through like 8 actors.
It's not CW, but the new Marvel Inhumans thing, like at least 3 of the actors had been on Smallville. Including Serenda Swan and Anson Mount, which I think is funny. But well, anyway.
There's only one thing left for us to hit, really, and that is killer theories.
Yeah.
Because who let's go around the table. Let's start with Lindsay, since she's new to the gang. Lindsay, who do you think is the killer?
Okay, I have
7
two
episodes
theories.
In.
I have 2 theories.
Ooh, okay.
The first is Miss Grundy, because I just don't believe that we're done with her. She was tutoring Jason Blossom, and there was just like, she's such a predator. It's just so gross. So I have to believe that something was going on with her and Jason. And we don't know where she was when the actual gunshot that killed Jason went off. So I think that she's going to come back in at some point. But my second theory is from Madeline, because when we interviewed her at TCA, they had just finished reading episode 11, I think. And she mentioned that she really thinks her parents did it. After reading that episode. And so without even knowing what is in episode 11, I'm thinking, I've just always been so suspicious of the Blossoms. So I'm going Grundy or Blossoms.
Suspicious because they're disgusting human
beings.
Well,
yeah, they're monsters, obviously. But it's the Blossoms and Grundy. Those are my 2 theories.
What if the Blossoms and Grundy work together?
Then I would be doubly right, obviously.
That's true. Fair. Who you got, Craig?
Well, you get annoyed when I say Sheriff Keller.
Don't do it.
He was acting kind of shady this week. I mean, he just seemed a little slimy, wanting to pin it on Jughead a little too easily. So
you're right. He wanted to pin it on the homeless kid whose dad is a notorious bike gang member.
Yeah.
who has a murder wall. He just wanted to pin it on him for some reason, you know, because of all of the fingers that were pointed at Jughead.
But it's still, I mean, Jughead's an easy patsy to make it look like it's him. So I'm still on Team Sheriff Killer.
Save me, Russ.
Well, I mean, to be fair, my whole idea of Sheriff Keller has been kind of married to the fact that he's so close to the Blossoms and that the Blossoms are super sketchy. So I know you don't like the Sheriff Keller theory, but you could kind of point the camera ever so slightly away from Keller and still come up with fairly the same kind of direction. And you know, that ties into my whole Clifford Blossom thing and the idea that something is going on with that whole collective. And I still feel really strongly that the conflict between her or between the Blossoms and Hiram Lodge, which we don't know exactly what's been going on with that, but we've heard a lot of like little hints and little snipes and little clues, like that's going to play somehow into the bigger picture. So I'll save you by saying maybe related.
Well, was Clifford Blossom driving with a DWI? Did you heard about that with the subtitles, right? Should probably bring that up.
Yeah, that was from our old friend Betty and Juggy again. They reached out to me on Twitter and said, well, either Betty and Juggy or Tatiana, I can't remember which, but in any event, one of our regular kind of commenters, listeners, friends reached out to me on Twitter and said that from an international perspective, when you watch it on Netflix, you could turn on the subtitles. And the conversation that I had said maybe had to do with Sheriff Keller, maybe had to do with the body, maybe had to do with the documents in the funeral episode was actually Clifford essentially mocking Hal Cooper and saying, be careful of don't drink so much you're going to get yourself a DUI.
Interesting.
These fans are so much more ingenious than I could ever be.
I mean, maybe the dark side of the fandom hasn't come out yet, but I'm enjoying seeing the amount of love that the show is getting from the people who like it.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Yeah, the closest thing, like the only thing that I've heard that's been I wouldn't even say negative, because really it's been generally very, very cordial and courteous and very thoughtful and articulate. But I put up some videos of Cole Sprouse talking about asexual Jughead from the comics and the choice to go with Betty instead in the TV show. And there were a handful of people who are very, very invested in having an asexual, aromantic Jughead, who are like incredibly vocal both on my videos, and then later I saw them on, like, I think Brenda London's Twitter feed. So there are some members of the fandom who are not like 100% sunshine and roses, but as far as I can tell, they're not starting any kind of trouble at all. They wanted to see what they wanted to see, and it didn't come to pass in this version of the character.
Tell them to go watch Shadowhunters. Shadowhunters just introduced an asexual character.
Stop it.
Ooh. Oh, trust me, they know.
Ah, okay.
Well, sort of on that same vein, I've referred to it a couple times so far, but like having spoken with Cole last week, and you could see that full, very weirdly long interview on ScreenerTV.com, we even talk about what an Archie board game would look like. He has a dark, dark idea about it. But we talked about the asexuality and like how the relationship with Betty changes that. And it's interesting because I'm of the belief that, so the way he put it to me is, and it's the way Roberto has said it time and time again, season one is like the origin story of what this show is going to be. I don't think that putting Jughead with Betty now excludes him from either, you know, realizing he's asexual, coming clean about it. I don't think it necessarily deletes that as a possibility in a season two or a season three. But what really surprised me is Cole is of the belief that what they are going to get into is Jughead's history as a woman hater.
Oh.
Which I had no idea we were going to go down that road.
Yeah.
That's an interesting choice.
Well, I joked on Twitter that he's Betty sexual, but I think the asexual thing for him, I mean, you can still have feelings for someone and not want to have sex with them.
Well, yeah.
That's what I was going to say, is that the Betty-Jughead relationship thus far has not been a sexual relationship. It's been very romantic. Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, feeling it out, very cute kisses. There's no one's tearing clothes off of each other yet. So yeah, the CW show, give it time.
In spite of the fact.
Yeah, it's very chaste and it's very steeped in we're working closely together to solve this thing out.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just kind of evolved.
Exactly.
So I think
moment that excludes him being asexual.
Yeah, eventually.
Absolutely. I think that's the road they could go down. If they choose to go down it, whether they do or not, listen, Jughead has a super long history. The asexuality thing, while it would be good to see, it's also a fairly new sort of addition to the character. If it happens, great. If it doesn't happen, I don't. It doesn't make me hate the show.
No.
Yeah, no, I agree.
No, Jughead's such an interesting and complex character with or without it that I'm interested to see wherever he goes.
All right, so is that pretty much it? Or
I didn't give a killer theory.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, Chris, sound off.
I'm kind of in the boat with Lindsay this week, in the Grundy of it all. Because here's the thing I keep going back to. We keep talking about, like, who killed Jason Blossom. But we can't forget about the fact that he wasn't just killed. He was murdered, or he was tortured and frozen. Like, that is such a dark place to go. Like, that would be a dark place for so many people to go. And I feel, as we're learning more about the adults of Riverdale, they're all terrible humans. But can we really imagine, like, Penelope Blossom torturing her own child?
We could picture Dilton Doiley doing it.
That's because Dilton Doiley's a creep.
Yeah.
No, so, yeah. I agree. I think that Mr. Grundy is the only character who has been shown to be, like, actually dangerous and maliciously, you know, predatory.
But it's the kind of thing where I don't think it would have been her acting alone. I think she would have had to have done it with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did it with Archie.
Oh.
Actually, this seems like a really good time for me to bring up another, like, a fan theory that was shot my way by, I want to say it was Betty and Juggy, who are regular tweeters at us.
Betty and Juggy is amazing, so hi, Betty and Juggy.
Their idea, in a nutshell, was that it was the similarities between Jason Blossom and Archie are not a coincidence, and that it, in fact, Jason was killed essentially in a dark, tragic misunderstanding where someone was out there actually trying to kill Archie Andrews, and that's why they were at Sweetwater Lake that morning.
Ooh.
I love that.
Ooh. Yeah, and I mean, there's obviously nothing to discount it, mostly because so far from what we know, it's kind of, I don't want to say an arbitrary theory, because that makes it sound like there's not been any thought put into it, and clearly that's not the case. But it's so new, we haven't looked for anything against it.
Because he was a ginger. The gingers, listen, I love you guys, but like, this'll teach you.
Not to mention, that's a really interesting storyline if it's the case, because then someone still wants to kill Archie.
Right, if that was the last thing we found out this season.
Well, then you also have season two to deal with Cheryl and the Blossom family, like, dealing with the fact that their kid died because he kind of sort of looked like Dylan McKay's kid.
Yeah, and that's not exactly...
But that would cause a lot more drama.
Which is always...
Enter Molly Ringwald.
I'm so, so ready for that, by the way. So ready for it.
Well, I think we pretty much hit everything. Great episode. Did we all love the episode?
Yes. Yeah, it definitely. Was awesome having you on, Lindsay.
Thank you guys for inviting me. This was fun.
Go ahead and give out all your social media deets so people can find you and follow you and mock you when I make fun of you on Twitter.
Well, gosh, you just make it sound so appealing. I'm at Lindsay Joanne on Twitter, and I think it's Lindsay Joanne McDonald on Facebook.
Oh, there you go. Craig?
I'm K-Site TV. I am a million other things. I have a Twitter handle, Riverdale TV, where I post all my Riverdale stuff. So you should follow it, because it only has like 300 followers. And also facebook.com/K-Site TV or facebook.com/Riverdale TV. And of course, you can find all of us at the Archie Digest podcast page on Facebook and on Podbean. And we're on iTunes, so please subscribe and comment. And I'm sure Russ is about to say those things anyway, but I just beat him to it.
Yes. Well, speaking, before we actually, do you still have that contest thing running on Facebook?
Yes, we do. I mean, we've talked about this last time, but the bottom line is, if you have a Jason Blossom killer theory, and you are the first person to correctly identify Jason Blossom's murderer on our Facebook page, then you can win a custom-made Jughead hat.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Lindsay, as a guest host, you're disqualified. Sorry.
Oh, well, whatever.
And Trevor, you can't enter either.
I'm going to make a fake Facebook, I guess.
Blackjack and hookers. Anything else, Chris?
Well, first of all, as I'm sure Russ will say, please rate and review this on iTunes. I'm not saying you have to give us 5 stars, but don't be a dick.
Exactly.
Just give us 5 stars. You know, whatever. You can find me at Chris Hayner on Twitter and Instagram, ChrisHayner.
Waterworld.
Everything I write and everything Lindsay writes is at ScreenerTV.com. But we are very clever human beings. And lastly, because I will never stop plugging this, you should all follow at Waterworld Photos on Instagram, because it is my true life's joy.
It is absolutely what you should do.
That's all I got.
Awesome. And I'm Russ Burlingame, at Russ Burlingame on Twitter. You can do at @ECV_podcast. That's the Emerald City Video Podcast, where myself and a bunch of my friends talk about movies. We used to work at a video store way back when video stores were a thing that still existed. And it's a ton of fun. And then, other than that, yeah, rate us, review us on iTunes, subscribe to us on iTunes or on Podbean. It's archiedigest.podbean.com, or you can go on facebook.com and look for Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. We're a podcast about a story about a town. And we'll see you again on March 30th. The next couple of weeks, we have no Riverdale. I know it's very, very sad. It's sad for us, too, because we actually haven't seen beyond episode 7, and we are, for the first time ever, at the same point that all of you folks are at home, just chomping at the bit to find out what's next. But yeah, anybody who hasn't gotten caught up on the podcast yet, this is a perfect time to do it, because you got 3 weeks without any new Riverdale. And then when you come back, March 30th, New episode will be here. Same bat time, same bat channel. In the meantime, check back periodically because I've got some things I'm trying to line up, and we might actually be doing at least one special episode between now and then.